Last week, when Brett Kavanaugh took the stand in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he addressed a document from his teenage years.
For one thing, our yearbook was a disaster. I think some editors and students wanted the yearbook to be some combination of Animal House, Caddyshack, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which were all recent movies at that time. Many of us went along in the yearbook to the point of absurdity.
Kavanaugh's Georgetown Prep yearbook has become the subject of public debate in recent weeks. But he says the yearbook doesn't reflect what he was like in high school. Instead, he said it indicates what movies were popular at the time. Well, we've got two movie critics here in the studio, and we're going to talk about what teenagers like Brett Kavanaugh were watching in the 80s. Rafer Guzman is the film critic for Newsday and The Takeaway. Hey, Rafer.
Hey, Tanzina.
And Allison Wilmore is a critic and culture writer for BuzzFeed. Hi, Allison.
Hey there.
So let's get into it. We started off the segment with that wonderful song from The Breakfast Club, which is one of my problematic faves, by the way. But we're talking about the 80s. And for those of us who don't remember the 80s, tell us, what was the landscape like back then, Rafer?
Oh, you had to come to me, didn't you, for that?
I did. I wanted to be gentle with Allison.
Well,
yes.
Look, I was there. I was there for The Breakfast Club. I was there for 16 Candles. Those movies, I know they've come under fire lately for some of the things that have been depicted in them. Although you have to remember, at the time, they were a little bit of a reaction to movies that were even worse, like Porky's and things like that, or something like Zapped with Scott Baio, where he develops telekinesis and can go around lifting women's skirts.
Yes.
Hilarious.
Critical skill, apparently, in the 80s.
Right. The John Hughes movies were, at the time, I think, thought of as very sensitive, a little bit kind of radical, especially The Breakfast Club, which was just teenagers sitting around in a room talking, which no one had ever seen anything like that before. But the real, the guiding principle, I think, of a teen film at the time was going to be a lot of women's bodies and a lot of, sex behind the gym and rowdy and rambunctious and very hormonally driven.
Allison, you're nodding your head. As a woman watching these films, what was your take on that?
Well, I grew up with them afterwards, seeing them on TV. They were, I think, like standards on basic cable forever. I think you could flick on a TV on a Saturday and one of them would be on there. I think for me, I was kind of trying to figure out how to be a teenager. And I think you watch movies like this and you're like, is that how it's going to go? And you watch it with a mixture of kind of understanding and skepticism. I think Molly Ringwald, who is, of course, the star of a lot of these, has written really interestingly looking back on these movies now. And she has said that they're also sort of a reaction to the kind of after-school specials. A lot of teenagers are like, I don't want to get lectured and being told these warnings. So it was also, in some of the ways, like you were supposed to be seeing people act out, behave in ways that you didn't otherwise get to see.
And we asked on Twitter, I asked yesterday for people to share their problematic faves with us. And the movie 16 Candles came up a lot. So particularly because of its depiction of dating and sex and what a lot of people would call rape culture. Let's play a clip from the movie. This is Jake Ryan talking about his girlfriend, Caroline.
I got Caroline in the bedroom right now, passed out cold. I could violate her 10 different ways if I wanted to.
What are you waiting for?
I don't know. She's beautiful and she's built and all that. I'm just not interested anymore.
Allison, did anyone pay attention to that dialogue in 1984, do you think?
I can't speak for that time, but I, as someone who watched it, I remember that line just kind of like searing itself in my brain because Jake Ryan is like the dreamboat. He is the aspirational figure. And this is how he talks about his girlfriend at the time. I think it's really difficult not to hear that, at least as a woman, to hear that and not kind of think like, oh, is that what I need to watch out for? Like, is that what I need to avoid to be seen as in this dichotomy of how women are as good or bad? Is that what you need to choose?
And Rafer, I'm thinking, is it fair to say that these movies are showing us like how teenagers actually acted at the time or what attitudes towards sexual assault were like? Because in the Kavanaugh hearings we heard at the top of the show, he suggested that they were just imitating this. It wasn't real life.
Yeah, I think those movies were all combination of a little bit of realism and a lot of fantasy and wish fulfillment.
Wish fulfillment.
Okay, let's be clear.
No, let's be clear, just checking.
Yeah, no, you're right. I will answer the question that you asked, Allison, and I would say nobody raised any objection to this back then. I never heard, I was a teenager at the time. I never heard anyone say anything about any of that. This was the way that the older kids behaved in your mind, and that was cool, and we all knew sort of what guys were like, and women had to know what guys were like, and that was kind of how it was. You know, I personally was never a fan of 16 Candles kind of for that reason. I mean, there's a lot of things in that movie that I do like, but the Jake character, I was always a little bit miffed as a kid that all the girls were falling over Jake, and I always kept thinking, what's so great about that guy aside from the fact that he looks really good? He doesn't seem that different from any of the villains to me. And one of the things that I think is interesting is that, you know, that character has remained the dreamboat for decades. And it is really only recently that everyone, women included, kind of snapped to and said, hey, wait a minute, I've kind of forgotten about that whole scene.
And we did actually get a lot of reaction yesterday to this tweet. I asked people about some of the movies they loved that they now think are cringeworthy, and I'll read some of those to you. So we had journalist Jeff Yang, who's been on The Takeaway. He said, everything John Hughes, but especially 16 Candles. He also mentioned Revenge of the Nerds, which came up a lot. Anna Sale, the host of Death, Sex, and Money, said Heathers. One commenter, Deshelle Eve, said, just rewatched Grease with my daughter, and the misogyny is pretty out of control. Allison, your thoughts on any of those? I mean, we've already talked about 16 Candles, but Revenge of the Nerds?
Oh, Revenge of the Nerds, I think, you know, when you watch it, that also, you know, 16 Candles, I think, in some ways tries to ground itself in, there are parts where it's a teenage girl's fantasy about kind of getting chosen by, you know, the hottest guy at school. But I think Revenge of the Nerds is like a very kind of like, you know, powerful male fantasy also about what you're allowed to do as underdogs, you know, and about women as like point system, essentially, that, you know, proof of your virility and your success and something that you deserve. And I think that idea has had a real hold on people that is has not been good.
I also think that, you know, when we were talking about Grease earlier, and I think that, you know, just I was saying, you know, the ideal was to look like Olivia Newton-John, be blonde, beautiful, right? Very. There were also some ways that women were expected to behave in a lot of these films. But going past the 80s, you know, how have teenagers evolved in film? I think about the film Kids in the 90s, right? That's really different from the John Hughes genre. So
sure.
Where are we today when it comes to teenagers in film?
I think we are actually in a really great place, to be honest. I really feel like there are a lot of voices coming out that are very genuine, non-condescending, people who I think are reaching back into their teenage years and trying to bring something very real that talks to kids on their own level. I would think of something like The Edge of 17, one of my favorite movies in recent years, Eighth Grade, which I know everyone's talking about. I'll tip my hand a little bit, but The Hate U Give, which comes out tomorrow, I think it is. Not a perfect film, but that is a film that is talking directly to teenagers, particularly teenagers of color, but I think all teenagers in a really straightforward, honest, great way. And so I think that teen films have really in some ways caught up and certainly surpassed the old ones.
Rafer, you mentioned things like Edge of 17, which is a film I love, and Diary of a Teenage Girl, which I don't know if I would say I would recommend for teenagers. It's very grown up, but I think has like this wonderful female character. And, you know, and I think you're seeing more women directors come in and bring like a very, you feel their perspective there. You know, and a lot of people were talking about, and I think it's a really interesting movie, To All the Boys I Loved Before, which is a Netflix romantic comedy. And that movie like explicitly cites 16 Candles. The characters watch it and one of them is like, isn't this kind of racist? And the other is like, a lot racist, but Jake Ryan, you know? And I think that is a representation of maybe a lot of the ways we look back at these movies now to be like, maybe we want to take some parts and discard some parts. And in that movie, you know, you've got a kind of update of Jake Ryan and he's a little less problematic.
And that's my question really too, is what do we do with these films? You know, this often happens in culture, as you know, we have cycles and then we evolve and then we look back and we say, well, I don't know. But we still watch movies from the silent era and the golden era of Hollywood. So are these movies something we can't touch anymore, Rafer?
I think you have to make a distinction with some of these movies. You know, something, to use an obvious example, Birth of a Nation can't really be entertainment anymore. That's just got to be an artifact that you examine and turn over and look at and discuss like a pottery shard or something. You can't just sit and have popcorn and enjoy that film, whereas I think you still could with 16 Candles, with the listeners' recommended Grease, which I also just showed to my two boys who are 8 and 10. And I did have to tell them, like, listen, the ending of this film is a little odd. You know, the fact that Olivia Newton-John decides that she has to become something of a juvenile delinquent and wear this, you know, cat suit and become extremely sexually aggressive and discard her old personality seems a little weird. And, you know, I think if you warn your kids ahead of time and keep these things in mind and put these things in context, they can still work. Grease is still a pretty great musical and my kids loved it, but I'm glad I gave them that talk.
What do you think, Allison?
Well, I've never been a fan of suggesting we discard, you know, history because it doesn't fit with how we've changed. I think it's good to look back and understand how we've changed. And I think it's okay to look back at something and both kind of enjoy the parts that hold up and to, you know, maybe cringe a bit at the parts that don't. You know, I really do think that, like, looking back at something like 16 Candles is illuminating in the ways in which you're like, this bypassed every kind of gatekeeper of, you know, to get it made. And no one commented on these things.
Or maybe they all agreed with it.
Right.
I mean, you know, they rubber stamped it, right? Because at the time it was considered okay.
Yeah. And, you know, Molly Ringwald has talked about being like, oh, I didn't like that, but I didn't say anything, you know? And I think that it is good to understand that because I think that also reflects on how we've changed.
Rafer Guzman is the film critic for Newsday and The Takeaway, and Allison Wilmore is a critic and culture writer for BuzzFeed. Thanks to you both for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.